welcome to episode 12 of Mojo for the Modern Man. This is your host, Ken Mossman, and in today's and our next episode, I'm going to be hosting Reverend Sean Harvey. And today we'll be hearing some of Sean's origin story, as it were, and he'll take us into what he discovered about listening to his own inner voice versus pursuing money, status, or title. Sean also describes creating realities from imaginal spaces. And as you'll hear, Sean is a visionary. If nothing else, Sean is a visionary with a pattern of making his visions into realities. He'll also discuss leaving Wall Street after what he refers to as playing the hyper-masculine game, really until it ran out of gas, and how he learned in his tenure at Eileen Fisher how to let go of a need to prove in order to really learn to lead from the heart. And there's a lot more to this story, including what Sean learned about the discipline of staying in the grays in order to lead from a more intuitive place. Enjoy this conversation with Sean Harvey. And just a quick reminder, if you haven't yet, please do subscribe to Mojo for the Modern Man via your favorite podcasting service. And with that, here's the conversation with Sean Harvey. So let's start here, Sean. What was it like growing up in your part of the world?
So I'm from a small town outside of Toledo, Ohio. I'm the son of truck drivers. Actually, my father was a truck driver for 43 years. My grandfather hauled steel for the Big Three in Detroit. My mother was a truck driver. And our cats were on the road with my parents before I was born. So it, I often joke, since a lot of my work is in the space of masculinity, healthy masculinity, I often say that I learned about masculinity in truck stops, being on the road with my dad. But that was, you know, that was the environment. Small town, Ohio, raised by truck drivers. And I was also... growing up pretty androgynous, so people couldn't tell if I was a boy or a girl. And that created a lot of confusion for me to kind of see, how do I have this like rugged father? And that wasn't me. So yeah. I didn't match my models.
So say that again, you didn't?
I didn't match my models.
Yeah. And as a kid, you know, if you think back to that, as a kid, what was it like noticing that you weren't, you know, quote, as you say, matching your models?
Yeah. Created a lot of confusion. I was never like the other kids. It was never... You know, so I just didn't quite know how I fit. You know, I may do, but I also, I think growing up, I spent a lot of time alone. I had a lot of imaginary friends. And I still remember one of my favorite activities growing up was playing school. And so I would play school, and I actually took it so seriously that I figured out where teachers went to their teacher supply store, and I bought actual grade books. I first started doing it with financial ledgers that I could get at a stationery store. And then I moved up to actual grade books that I would use and play with. And yeah, so I had a very imaginative mind that way.
Yeah, and that's great. And I'm curious about how your... you know, how has that vivid imagination, how has it served you?
Yeah, you know, I think the whole experience, both being more of kind of out on my own, being a bit of a lone ranger, having that imaginative mind, I think historically, push the envelope and said, so how can we make this happen? I think, and what can it look like and how can it be different? My My first tattoo is actually the Chinese character for to be different. And so, and I remember when I was 16, I think this was probably the first place where I started on my journey. I remember I came out as a gay man when I was 15, had a very easy time with my mom, total acceptance back in 1980, I believe it was probably 88, 89. And so there was an activist in Dayton, Ohio that was doing a lot of gay rights work. And so being me, I just called him up and said, hey, I want to start a conversation. I said, hey, I want to volunteer. And he said, well, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to help support gay youth coming out.
And here you were all of 15 or 16 years old at the time?
I was 16. So I was sneaking out to gay bars when I was 15, 16. And I just saw my, you know, other teenagers being taken advantage of. And so there's got to be another space for us to be able to come out besides gay bars. And so I said, I want to volunteer with gay youth. And he said, well, there's nothing like that in Dayton. And I said, well, I think there should be. And he said, well, if you want to start something, we'll give you the support of space and the financial resources. So back in, I think like, yeah, 1988, 89, I started the first gay and lesbian youth group for the city of Dayton, Ohio.
Wow. And
it still exists today, now serving all of Southwest Ohio, from Columbus to Cincinnati over to the Indiana border.
Wow.
And so that was, I think, my first example. And over the course of my life, when I have pursued money, status, or title, I've fallen flat on my face within 6 months. When I take a step back and listen to my inner voice, my truth, and make decisions from there, that's when the dots, now looking back, have all been connecting to the work I do today. So I think it's, to your question, I think that imaginative mind, one, has really propelled me to do things outside of the norm. Mm-hmm. And to listen to a voice other than external influences.
Yeah, beautiful. I love what you're saying here, because from the you know, if I think about, oh, okay, from the first few couple of conversations that you and I had, you know, what struck me right away was the sense of, you know, wow, this cat's visionary. You know, he's seeing things, he's seeing possibilities that others aren't seeing, and wow, you know, I for one want to hear about them. Mm-hmm. And the way that your imagination dovetails so beautifully, and I want to hear, this is all leading to a question about your work and about what you're up to now. But it's so clear from what I know of you that, you know, that imaginal space, if you will, the ability to see something that isn't yet there, and not only to see it, but to almost to be able to walk in and show someone else around, is what a beautiful skill set and to have.
Mm.
And it's more than that. I know it goes beyond quote unquote skill set. It's a gift. For sure. It's a gift. And with that, talk a little bit about the work that you're up to. Cause it is, I'll just say this, it's cool.
Thanks.
That's a technical term.
It's technical. It's cool. Yeah. You know, I was just talking to someone earlier today and explaining what it is that I do and kind of how I got here.
Yeah, and by the way, include the how you got here, because it's cool. That's cool too.
Well, I'll start there. So I was consulting on Wall Street. Often I say when I talk about this, I had played the game of being hyper masculine until it didn't serve me anymore, until I couldn't take it. And by that I mean being asked to wear the mask, expected to wear the mask, to suppress emotion, and to show up in a, you know, the super competitive environment of how do you shine outside of the rest. And in my last firm, I was, paid to be smart, So I had consulted for about 15, 20 years. I had been a professor for about 10 years. So I understood how business works. I understood how do we develop leaders. And then I went to work for, one more piece. So I went and did it until I just couldn't take it anymore. And so on my 40th birthday, I walked into my CEO's office at my old firm and said, I've lost my heart and my soul in this job, and I resigned. Basically, it's my birthday present. And within 2 weeks, an opportunity came along at Eileen Fisher. And so Eileen Fisher, for those who don't know, is the women's fashion company. It's about $500 million in revenue. It's a B Corp. And it fully and unapologetically subscribes to feminine leadership. So the first clue that this was going to be a different experience was the fact that I had an 8-month interview. And as I was, basically the way it worked was 2 months to determine job fit and 6 months to determine culture fit. I was the finalist after 2 months. And on my last interview, I met with our chief compassion officer, our chief culture officer, our chief culture officer, and my two bosses to process my transformation as a result of the interview process. That's a lot of processing.
That is a lot of processing. There's a lot in there.
There's a lot in there. And so I got the job. And on my first day, my two bosses sat me down for lunch. And in that conversation, they said, Sean, you have proven yourself in the interview process. Now we want you to stop proving yourself and learn how to be who you authentically are. You came in with your polish, but we've hired you for your heart. We want to see more of your heart and less of your polish.
And this is on the first or second day?
First day. 3 hours in. So I took that as permission. And so I was at Eileen Fisher for 5 years. I started out as the internal change agent for creative and then became the head of personal transformation and well-being for the company. I'm a
the head of transformation and well-being. That title itself is worth repeating.
Yeah, the head of personal transformation and well-being. So I'm an organization development practitioner by training. And so having seen, so many traditional corporate environments that are based on a masculine model, most everything that we've experienced that's been built has been built on a traditional masculine model.
And when you say traditional masculine model, my assumption, and correct me if this is inaccurate, is that it really is, to my mind anyway, it's a distorted masculine model. Power over domination, et cetera, et cetera. And if that's inaccurate, please speak up.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you have the masculine without the influence of the feminine, it can move into the place of the hyper-masculine because it has nothing else to release it from its own way of being and thinking.
Yes.
So the model does a couple of things. One, it gives preference to men. It asks then women to act like men to succeed in business.
Yep.
And at the same time, it doesn't give men the latitude to be in their authentic expression. There's a certain defined way we're supposed to show up and be. The other piece of it is that it just the policies and practices, you know, it's coming from this place of competition. It's coming from this place of getting things done. It's getting to the what with less emphasis on how do we get there. You know, it's less of a process orientation and more of an outcome-based orientation. It takes outcomes often in place of a focus on the people.
Right.
Right. And so all of that to say, then coming into Eileen Fisher and the way I describe it, it was where they say some experiences are like getting an MBA. This would have been like getting an MBA in compassion.
Mm.
Or how I like to say it, or conditioning. So every time I thought I understood something, I would get a message. Nope, that's not right. That's not how we do things around here. So I think the first example of it for me was going into a meeting and introducing myself by my credentials. I'm Sean Harvey. I've done so-and-so. And I just looked in the room and there were just eye rolls. And I was like, oh, I guess we don't talk about credentials. Okay. What's my identity then? Who am I if I'm not my title? Because the environment was very much once you're in a meeting, your title becomes irrelevant and you are just one of, everyone is on the same plane so that all voices can be heard and all voices at all levels can be on par with each other. Right? So I didn't have my title. I didn't have my credentials. And so I was stuck a lot of times at Eileen Fisher going, okay, so who am I when I'm not in my identity of my role? And so I think that was a big piece. So I'm going to get to your question.
No, this is the good stuff, Sean. Keep going. This is good. This is good.
I think, you know, one of the anecdotes I often share is that my third week on the job, I'm in the middle of Eileen's living room at her house, which is not too far from the Irvington office up in the suburbs of New York. And we're doing this exercise, this experience, like an all-day retreat on creative facilitation. 2.5 hours in, I find myself doing interpretive dance as a tree to a poem about a bumblebee trying to find her nectar while drums were beating in the background with my entire team and our chief culture officer in the room. When I was done, my boss just had this look on her face. She was just laughing, chuckling, and she just said, you know, you're in a different world now, right? And that really, I think, set the stage for what did it mean to work in a company that subscribed to feminine leadership?
Yeah.
The rules were different. The ways we collaborated were different. The ways we viewed hierarchy was different. The ways that we were rewarded was different. What we valued was different. We had a shared increase where everyone got the same increase at the end of the year. We had profit sharing. Individually, any of these could be at any other company, but kind of collectively, with the values, and we had a saying often that, which was to speak the truth in kindness. Yeah. And so there was that, and everything about Eileen Fisher, in my mind, I think the biggest distinction is that in most organizations, it's about the right answer. What's the right answer? What's the right thing to do? And it was often very black and white. It's the right way and there's the every other way. At Eileen Fisher, every conversation was about polarities. It was about how do we stay in the complexity of the gray. So it was never a this is the answer. It's how are we in the continuum? And how do we meet the needs of our customer, of our employees, and of the needs of the profitability of the organization, looking at things through the lens of the gray and the lens of polarities. And so...
So I just want to pause there because and highlight what you just a piece of what you just said, because those, you know, the deliverables didn't disappear. The stuff of business didn't disappear. There was still product to go out, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And there was this whole different way of approaching it, talking about it, and going about it?
Well, you know, I think we did a I co-authored an article for a journal on the spirituality of Eileen Fisher. How does Eileen Fisher, the company, retain its soul as it evolves? And we asked a number of employees when they were to think about the soul of the company. And one of the things that became a consistent theme was that Eileen, both Eileen and those that she imparted wisdom and insight to and heard their voices, would say they followed the unconscious knowing. That's the terminology they used. They followed the intuition. So Eileen turned, I want to get back to your point. Eileen turned $350 into a $450 million company, often operating from intuition, not necessarily from data. So that's, and the company, you know, when I arrived, the company was having double-digit growth year after year. It had been around for, I started the year, it celebrated 30 years. And it had 4% turnover.
Wow.
And it was ranked a best place to work 10 years in a row. So when you think about it, it was able to achieve business results. The year before I started, all employees, their profit sharing, I believe, was 11 or 13 weeks of pay.
Wow.
So generosity and just a different type of values, you know, to be able to make a company profitable, have a brand, and you can still do business through the lens of the good.
Thank you for joining Sean and me here on this episode of Mojo for the Modern Man. Of course, we'll be back next week with the second half of the conversation with Reverend Sean Harvey. Please do join us for that. If you want to reach out to Sean, you can reach him at Sean@soulfulfacilitator.com. That's Sean@soulfulfacilitator.com. And of course, visit Sean's website, soulfulfacilitator.com, to learn more about the good work that he's doing in the world, and particularly at his retreat center in just outside of Asheville, North Carolina. There's a lot going on there. Please, if you haven't yet, subscribe to Mojo for the Modern Man, and do visit my website, cirrusleadership.com, C-I-R-R-U-S leadership.com. Jump on there, sign up for my newsletter, and I look forward to seeing you back here on Mojo for the Modern Man. This is your host, Ken Mossman. Be well, take care.